Thursday's edition of the show. He is a man who currently is in this country, but no way near on the same kind of planet and time zone as I'm on right now. He is coordinating everything for Goal.com's coverage of the Confederations Cup. He is, of course, Mr. Paul McDonald, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Confed Cup so far. Paul, how are you doing, mate? I guess, have you put some posters up around your office so it feels like you're at least in Rio?
If only. I'm constantly getting phone calls from our correspondents and the guys we've got on the ground in the big cities, and they're telling me how good the weather is and how nice their hotels are and how lovely the stadiums are. I wish I could be there, but unfortunately I'm the one that sends them rather than getting to go myself. So,
well, Paul, there's plenty of people that will be looking for some trip advice and obviously to make their way down to Brazil for next summer. So at least you could start a little business, if you will, of football tours and organising these sorts of things, not only for the journalists but for the fans as well, mate. A bit of extra cash on the side would be all right.
Yeah, well, I'm getting the correspondents to put a detailed report together of all the cities, the good things and the bad things, and whether the stadiums are actually finished yet or not. So once I've compiled that, I might try and sell it to the highest bidder. We'll see.
Let's hope that none of them have an experience like TalkSport's Adrian Durham had of actually getting mugged outside the American Isle. Let's hope for their sake that they're having a good time. Look, it's been a fantastic tournament so far, and arguably one of the best games I've watched all year took place last night between Italy and Japan. We'll talk about Brazil, Mexico in just a moment, but this Italy-Japan game, you just couldn't take your eyes off it. Were you surprised about how well the Japanese came out after that defeat to Brazil?
Yeah, I felt the Japan team were pretty abject against Brazil. I don't think that they did themselves any justice. I think they've got good attacking players like Kagawa and Honda, and those players showed their abilities last night, but against Brazil, they were really lackluster. I really do feel as if this Brazil team, as much as Neymar is in good form, if you get at them, then I think there's weaknesses in the back line, and I think Japan didn't do that. But they were so much better on attack last night. I can honestly say, of all my time watching football, I can't really remember an international match quite like that. It defied all logic, defied all reason. It was just one of those games you had to sit back and ignore the terrible refereeing decisions and ignore the shocking defending and just appreciate it for what it was. A quite incredible game of football.
It was end-to-end at points. There were long spells as well when Japan were controlling it. Looked so comfortable on the ball. How much do you think the climate down in Brazil played into Japan's hands and really went against the Italians? Because they were halfway through that second half, the Italians looked almost dead on their feet at points.
Yeah, I think Cesare Prandelli admitted after the match that his team were struggling to acclimatise to the changeable weather in Recife. Speaking to my correspondents, I know that Recife is quite temperamental when it comes to the weather. It can be blistering sunshine 1 minute and then torrential rain the next. And I think his players really struggled in the first 25 minutes against a Japan team who I think felt as if they had something to prove after their opening match. And they flew completely out the blocks. I mean, Honda and Kagawa in the first half completely dominated. And in truth, they made the midfield of Japan made Pirlo look like an old man last night, I have to say. I think Pirlo was fantastic against Mexico in the opening match, but last night he really struggled to keep up with the pace, and I think Japan took full advantage. And I think any neutral watching like myself felt a little disappointed that Japan did nothing to take out of the game, because they more than did enough to deserve at least a draw.
And you mentioned a couple of times now Honda in the heart of that midfield for Japan, and a guy who, if I'm right in saying, is going to be out of contract come this summer, and he's going to be looking for somewhere to land. He's doing himself a lot of favours. Where could you see him landing, potentially in Europe still? I know he was in Russia last season.
Yeah, I think he said his fair share of injury problems in Russia, and that's put a lot of suitors off, and particularly when he had quite a hefty price tag when he was his first or second season there. But now he's available on a free, I think that there should be many teams willing to take a chance on him. As I say, his fitness could be an issue, and barring any disasters in a medical or such like, I think a guy like that you can get for nothing, but such a cultured ability on the ball and calmness in possession, I think a lot of teams would be crying out for a player like that. I think he could have a queue of suitors round the block after this tournament's finished.
I think a number of people that I spoke to have said that it almost reminded them of, not in the same way in terms of grittiness, but like a Paul Scholes with the passing and the distribution that he was able to find yesterday. You think about Kagawa already being at Manchester United. I mean, for something for nothing, it'd be worth a pump for David Moyes, maybe?
I really don't see why not. I mean, I think Man United's central midfield area, the problems they've had there are well documented. I think they've never really managed to fill that position properly, hence why Scholes had to return from retirement to actually to fill that necessity in midfield. I remain unconvinced at United by the likes of Cleverley, and I think bearing in mind that we're starting a new era at United, they've not been shied away from signing free transfers in the past when you look at obviously Michael Owen. And I think if you're picking something like this up on a free, what is it to lose? He would settle in well, I think, in Manchester because Kagawa's already there. He can learn the lessons that Kagawa's learnt in his first season in Manchester. I don't see why not. I can't really see any risks in this deal if United were interested. But I think he could play in any other league as well. I think that the way he dictates the play, I think he could fit into to a Spanish team, like, for example, like Valencia or someone like that. He could slot into their midfield perfectly as well. I really do think he's a very good player, and I think if he were to remain fit, he'd be a very astute signing for anybody this summer.
And Valencia, I'm sure, would be very appealed by towards him by the fact that he would cost them nothing with all their financial troubles going on and the problems in the Spanish economy in general. With the Italians and being in this Confed Cup, obviously there's that highlighting stat of World Cup football, which is, you know, European sides don't win in South America and outside of Europe. For Italy, how important is this in getting almost acclimatized maybe a year earlier and getting used to playing intense football, because it's been treated very seriously this tournament so far in these conditions?
I think this will be a real eye-opener for some of these European teams going into this climate in June and in such a season where the weather is changeable. It can be muggy, it can be the air can be dense. But I really do think that a lot of teams will look at this tournament and look at how Italy struggled in the first half last night and then reassess their plans for next summer should they make it. Obviously, domestic seasons restrict what these club players can do in terms of getting out to Brazil early and getting acclimatised as soon as possible. But I really do think, if you look back to Japan and South Korea a few years ago, they finished the season early, and a lot of teams made their way out there as soon as they possibly could in order to get used to the weather. I think this could be a situation where the really big nations, the ones that really want to go and try and win this tournament, the Spains, the Italys, the Germanys, will really want to get out there as soon as possible and give themselves a good 10 days or even 2 weeks in that weather, training on it every day, to adjust their bodies to the climate, because I think there's been a few teams that have been shell-shocked so far.
We've been talking a little bit as well about the politics surrounding this Confederations Cup, and the protests and the violence that we've seen so far over the last few days is apparently getting worse. I mean, Sepp Blatter came out today, I think it was, and said, we didn't ask you to bid for the World Cup, but, you know, we didn't force this on you. You opted into this. This is going to be a problem, though, not only for now, but for leading into the finals, if this frustration in the people of Brazil builds up and up in this next 12 months or so. How do you see this one potentially panning out as a big downfall, possibly, for Brazil as a host nation?
Yeah, to be honest, I see it as an inconvenient problem for the higher-ups. I think, politically, for reasons that we've seen in other countries, the gravitas given to being able to secure a World Cup, and then obviously Rio's got the Olympics in 2016, gives people great political power, but at the expense of the local people. And I think if you've noted how the protests have increased exponentially, you were looking at between 2,500 to 3,000 in Brasilia for the opening match, and then it was more for Rio in the next game, and then in Fortaleza yesterday there was anywhere upwards of 50,000, and then that was mirrored again in Rio last night. The people are speaking, and you're talking about one of the most passionate football nations in the world here. And if they're willing to step out and oppose holding the World Cup in their own country, given the memories they've still got of 1950 and losing that game to Uruguay, given how they would like to exercise those demons, if these people are still going to come out and protest in this tournament after all of that and how their football history has been affected by that, you really need to wonder how deep the social problems go in the country. I think it's going to be a real headache. And I think short-sighted comments from the likes of Ronaldo and Pele, who are telling people to get behind the team and stop protesting, really need to look at the bigger picture and realise that this is more than just a football tournament. This is a country that's in dire need of social reform.
It's amazing how often we've had to say, you know, there are things that are bigger than football in the last 18 months or so, especially when it comes to organisations and people's reactions towards incidents in and around the game. When it comes to this as well, you think the more that there are protests, the heavier-handed the opposition is going to be towards these protests to try and dampen it down. It will increase in costs in dealing with these things. And then it all starts to spiral out of control as well. I don't want to think too kind of, too extreme about it, but is there a possibility that we are going to see a delay, any sort of maybe rearrangement of a World Cup or anything like that, if it gets out of hand at this point?
It's really difficult to say at this time. I mean, Sepp Blatter's modus operandi has always been to take the World Cup to places that it's not been before, or it's not been for many years. I think he's proven that with Japan and South Korea, and then, of course, with South Africa. Japan and South Korea were 100% ready to host the tournament. I remain to be convinced that South Africa have had any real benefits from hosting the World Cup. They end up with many white elephants, stadiums that are sitting doing nothing now, that are hosting domestic league matches with 80,000 capacities, with 5,000 or 6,000 people turning up. I mean, I don't see how that affected the area and the infrastructure positively in any way. And I think there's a very similar feeling, a similar resonance in some of the sides in Brazil at the moment. One of the famous quotes over the past few days is, building football stadiums won't help cure people. And I think a lot of the funds could be better spent on hospitals, which seem to be in dire need in the areas. So, I mean, it's a really, really thorny political issue at the moment. And there is so much power in FIFA and so much power in government. And I think, as we've seen the protests increase, we've also seen, as you say, the heavy-handed nature of the policing increase as well. I think there was reports last night in the major cities of rubber bullets and even tear gas, which was something that didn't look as if it was going to come to fruition at the early stages of the tournament when the protests seemed more generally more peaceful. So I really hope that the situation doesn't get worse from that perspective. And I really hope that the Brazil don't get too heavy-handed in terms of their overall vision of this tournament, because it could lead to some nasty incidents, and that's just not what they want.
We saw, of course, let's move away from the politics, because we do have you on to talk football, Paul. We saw yesterday as well Brazil take on Mexico in a game that was far removed from the entertainment value that we got out of Italy and Japan. There's been so much hype around Neymar. Another quality finish, although he did shin it for the goal last night, and a wonderful piece of skill to create the Joe's second of the tournament and Brazil's second in that game. Are you buying the hype, Paul, or are you seeing a player that does moments of magic sporadically?
I'm just going to lay my cards on the table right at the start here and say that I wrote a piece for Goal about 2 months ago, just when the Neymar deal was getting mooted, from a Barcelona perspective, saying that I didn't think the deal would work out. I actually branded Neymar an A-list player based on the trailer alone, and I think he's proven that more often than he's proven himself invaluable to teams. In fairness to him, I thought he was excellent last night. I thought it was by far his best game in a Brazil jersey. Obviously, he's played a lot of friendlies in that time because Brazil are preparing for the World Cup. But and a lot of times I've seen him, he tends to drift in and out of matches, particularly in the second half. He can disappear, and he's reduced to cameo moments of skill rather than adding anything of real value to the team. But I think that the things he did do last night were of absolute benefit. I thought that the skillful manoeuvres that he did and the 1-2s and the flicks were all beneficial to the team. They were driving the team towards goal and for the greater good, rather than just being snippets that can be chipped together on a YouTube video, which I think has not blighted his time at Santos, but has been indicative of the coverage that he's got there. So I think he needs to step much more into that area of being a team player and being beneficial to all concerned, rather than just being a Ronaldinho knockoff, we might say, because Ronaldinho at his very best at Barcelona, yes, he used to balance the ball on his head, he used to flick it off his shoulders, he used to chest pass it, but he still scored wonderful goals and still created goals for his team and was absolutely integral part of that great Rijkaard side. Neymar needs to shape his game into something more similar to what Ronaldinho did at his best, where he coupled the great pieces of skill and the great moments of brilliance that fans love to watch with doing something relevant and something important to the team. I don't think Neymar's there yet, and I think he needs to get there as soon as possible at Barcelona. Otherwise, he's going to have Messi shouting in his ear from day one.
And I think Lionel Messi, and whether he'll be able to relinquish some of that star profile and pass some of it onto Neymar and allow him to take some of the spotlight as well, is something that's going to be very interesting playing out over the next season. Just before we go, Paul, very quickly, I think we all know what the result of Spain-Tahiti is going to be tonight, of course. Record-breaking night, do you think, for Spain, as some people are predicting in the press?
Yeah, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Spain's record score is 13-0. Mm. I think based on what I've seen from Nigeria against another night, this is not by any manner of means a fantastic Nigeria side. Nigeria could easily have scored double what they scored in the end in the 6-1 win. I think Tahiti have just got what they wanted out of the tournament. They've got the experience and they've got a goal in Brazil, and I don't think they would have wanted any more than that. I think the only way that Spain will not score in double figures tonight is if they take the foot off the gas and just continue to pass it around. If it's a particularly warm night, just to save their energy for later on in the tournament. Otherwise, I don't see any way that Tahiti backline can stop the onslaught. So it really will be very much dependent on whether Spain can be bothered or not, I think.
And can they beat that record win of Australia? I think 31-0 is the world record for an international scoreline. So it'd be interesting if that does take place. Nigeria-Uruguay, on the other hand, is a very entertaining fixture, I think, on paper. Nigeria, as you say, was sloppy in front of goal against Tahiti. Uruguay it took a very long time, to get out of second gear against Spain. And really, it was that Suarez free kick that suddenly gave him a burst and a drive to finish strongly against the world champions. Do Uruguay, if they can step up their game slightly, Uruguay in theory should walk this, but do you not think that the attitude of the Uruguayan players and maybe the kind of lack of chemistry in there gives Nigeria a fighting chance of getting 3 points?
Yeah, as I said about Nigeria, when you look through the squad list, compared the squad list to the Nigerian teams in days gone by, when you had players like Babangida and Kanu and Yakini and all these excellent players, this team is nowhere near that. But by the same token, this Uruguayan team have regressed considerably since the one that won the Copa America 2 years ago. They're an aging side and they're still overly reliant, in my opinion, on a lot of the older players. And obviously they've got Suarez and Cavani, and what a great strike force that is, and obviously the veteran Forlan to come off the bench, but there just seems to be something lacking in that Uruguay team at the moment. The drive that they had that took them to one of the top nations in the world and obviously World Cup semi-finalists seems to be sorely lacking at the moment. And I think there could be a rethink in terms of World Cup qualification, because Uruguay are by no manner of means secure to get to World Cup 2014. So I think a lot of minds in that squad, and including the coach, are just looking towards the upcoming qualifiers in August and September and making sure that Uruguay actually get there, rather than concentrating in this tournament. And if they allow their mindset to drift too far, then Nigeria could spring a shock on them, I think.
And obviously we've got the weekend games coming up as well. Italy against Brazil is the one that we're all going to be looking at to see who takes first place in that group. Is this going to be treated? Obviously, there's the great rivalry that stems back from the 1994 penalty shootout, Baggio blazing that ball over the bar and Brazil winning the World Cup in the USA. Is this going to be treated as intensely as expected, with the rivalry, with the history behind these two, and the chance to avoid Spain going into the semi-finals of this tournament?
Yeah, well, in most occasions you would say that that's been almost a dead rubber in the group, given that both sides have qualified. But they do seem to be taking it very, very seriously, particularly the Brazilians. I think there's a general feeling in the Brazil camp that anything else other than victory in this tournament will be deemed a failure. They want to prove to the nation, and they also want to vindicate bidding for this World Cup, because I think Brazil's performance in this, I think that there are very much a dichotomy between the support that Brazil are getting in the stadiums and the protests on the street. I think that the Brazil camp feel that if they can go on and win this tournament, then they can almost attempt to shift public persuasion towards them and say, listen, we can actually do this, we can win this tournament. Because I think some of the thoughts is, we're bringing this World Cup to our country, we're trying to banish the memories of 1950, but we don't have a team good enough to do it. And I think the pressure that's placed on Neymar's shoulders is so much that I think people think he won't live up to expectations. But the team have played well so far, they're winning games, Neymar is on fire. And I think there is a genuine belief that if they go on and win this tournament, then they can really bring the public behind them and really drive for World Cup 2014. And if they're going to get to the final, at least, I think obviously they'd rather avoid Spain in the semi-final. So I think by that token, I think there'll be real interest in both sides in this game. And it should be a real cracker, I think.
Let's hope that the weekend's football and the CONCACAF? No, I'm getting confused between the World Cup qualifiers and, of course, the Confederations Cup action that is coming up tonight. Gives us the same kind of excitement and highlights as we had yesterday evening, especially in that Italy-Japan game. Paul, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back once again on the show, mate. It's been far too long since we had you on, and we hope that you're at least getting the rest and getting the time and a bit of sleep as you operate on Brazilian time in the UK. I still find that very baffling indeed, mate. Take care.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Thanks there. Paul McDonald from Goal.com joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things Confederations Cup final. Yeah, I can't imagine what it's like to be operating. I suppose when I was at university, I was operating on Brazilian time-ish. You know, I was about getting up like 10 and 12 o'clock in the afternoon. 12 o'clock in the afternoon, 10 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, you go to bed at like 4 o'clock in the morning after a hard night's work of partying, but not doing journalism in one country but living on another country's time zone. Very peculiar indeed, and we do hope that Paul's getting enough rest so that he can enjoy and not be overtired for watching what has been a very entertaining Confederations Cup indeed.